Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Today on our tech show, we're going to be talking about subscription services and all of the different music streaming platforms out there. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. And great to have back Beth D'Angelo. Formerly, Beth Wendt joins us. She's a senior IT specialist of UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. She brings 20 years of experience and a love for creative problem solving. So I hope you'll join in. Do you have questions about streaming or using a subscription service? What subscription services and streaming platforms do you use? We'll take your questions and comments at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Beth D'Angelo, welcome. Good to have you with us today.
Good morning, Larry. How are you?
I'm doing great, and I hope you're doing well as well, and I hope you can tell us about subscription services. Somebody asked me, what the heck's a subscription service? And that might be the place to start.
Well, it's not just for magazines anymore. I suppose we've got lots to talk about with these. They're just blowing up everywhere.
Yeah, what are they? what's the new thing for us then with this compared to what we've been doing?
Well, so the big thing is you've got subscription services for, you know, things that we used to, I guess, purchase through different means. So you used to purchase your TV, the TV that you watched on a daily basis, generally through a cable provider. Nowadays, there are many different ways where you can kind of pick and choose the different programming that you want to come through on your TV via different streaming TV or media services. There's a whole list of those. We've also got many different streaming music services that you can choose from. So you can have access to just about any music that you would like to listen to at any time, which is fantastic. We also have a lot of subscription software services now, where you used to go purchase a piece of software that either came as a download that you would install on your computer or came as a CD or a DVD-ROM that you would install on your computer. And once you owned that piece of software, it was yours. Once you purchased it once. Now we have subscription services for some of the similar software where you pay a yearly or a monthly fee to use that service. And a lot of that software itself is actually no longer housed on your computer. It's off in the cloud. So there's all different types of subscription services that we can talk about. It's almost like a tongue twister trying to say that.
So what are the advantages and the disadvantages from a consumer point of view for these services?
Well, I think one of the major advantages.
Major
advantages is that you have live access to the newest version of whatever it is you are using. So when we talk about a subscription software service, if you're looking at something like Microsoft Office, that's a product that most of us are probably pretty familiar with. The things like Outlook for email or Microsoft Word or Microsoft Excel. When you used to purchase a CD or a DVD with those software installs on them and put it on your computer, if you wanted to update that software, you would actually have to go out and seek out the latest version of that software and download those incremental updates to it and make those updates yourself to the software as it lived on your machine. Or you would have to, if there was a new version out, say you had Office 2013 and you wanted to upgrade to Office 2016, you'd actually have to go and buy a new version of Office in order to upgrade to get those new features. Whereas with a subscription service, every time you launch that software, you are launching the newest version of that software that subscription service offers to you. So you have all those features immediately available. You don't have to pay for that every time you want a new version of it.
What if I don't want the new version? What if I like the version I had?
Well, then that's one of the big drawbacks. So that's one of the things that folks like myself who work in the world of providing these subscription services to large groups of users, the vendors who provide those services, so we'll stay in the Microsoft world just for consistency, they make changes constantly. And it may be a change that you don't like, and you don't have any control over that because they are going to make a change based on what is most beneficial to the mass of consumers that are using that product. And they're going to roll that out with, you know, they'll send a communication out if you're subscribed to it so that you'll know about it ahead of time. But most people don't keep an eye on that. So suddenly the interface that you're used to seeing could look very different tomorrow. So that's one thing that we have to really adapt to in this new world of continuous improvement to the software that we're using. As those software packages continuously improve, we have to continuously learn new features and new interfaces to look at. So where is the button I used to push to do this?
Yeah. What about payment? How does the payment... Are the payments pretty much all the same, how they work?
Yeah, it tends to work towards the vendor's advantage, the person selling the software product rather than the consumer in the long term, because they are getting you signed up for a continuous payment to them. So whether it's an annual payment or a monthly payment for that service, generally they're going to make more money off of you than if you just purchase something one time, because you are going to continuously pay a smaller amount, but over time, it's going to add up to more than you paid for something if you bought it once. So if you were to go out, you know, 5 years ago and buy the Microsoft Office for home and business, that probably would have cost you about $149 to buy the DVD to install that on your computer and have it. Now, if you want to pay for that service, generally, you're going to pay either a monthly subscription fee for it, usually that's in the like $10 to $20 a month range, or you're going to buy it yearly. It's going to cost you the same amount for that first year, but then you're going to have to pay that every year. Whereas if you purchase that version at the store and install it on your computer, you could potentially use that for 2, 3, or 4 years with that one-time purchase if it suits you and not have to pay for that every year on that subscription basis. So it really depends on what you're looking for. If you want the latest and greatest all the time, subscription service is really going to be the most value for you for your money. But if you're a kind of set it and forget it and you don't need those updates and you don't want them, then you may want to look at not going that direction for your software at least.
Yeah. So what other direction can you go though? I mean, is there any other way you can go?
Well, with stuff like Microsoft, they've gone completely away from the one-time purchase setup. So for that kind of product, you really don't have an option other than a subscription, unless you, you know, maybe could purchase an older version of the software on the used market. So Microsoft has fully moved to this. They're all in on the subscription model.
Mm. Beth Wendt, Beth DeAngelo, excuse me, our guest today.
That's okay.
Maybe even you're getting having to get used to that a little bit.
Oh yes. Find the wrong name. It'll take time, so no problem.
Beth is a senior IT specialist at UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. Questions for her? I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. Talking about subscription services right now, we can take other questions as well, IT-related questions, certainly at, again, 800-642-1234, or email us to ideas@wpr.org. What about music streaming services? There are a lot of options out there. And maybe just the basics, maybe you should just explain what exactly it means to stream something.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're definitely hitting on a topic that I could go into great detail on if I had the time. But streaming music services, kind of revolutionary to those of us who are music lovers and, you know, want to be able to access pretty much anything they want to listen to at any moment. So for a music lover, it's a really fantastic option to have now. So streaming in and of itself is basically you are opening up a window within either an application or a browser or an app on your phone that directly connects out to a service that has a large warehouse of media for you to consume. And whether that's movies or television shows or books or music, like we're talking about, they have this giant catalog of media that is stored on servers. So it's all converted to digital data. All this music lives out there in their data warehouse. And you sign up for a service that gives you a portal into that warehouse to allow you to select what you want to consume media-wise at any time. So I can say, I want to listen to some Stevie Wonder right now, and I really feel like hearing Superstition, so I'm going to go out to Spotify, which is the music service that I currently use, and we'll sing its praises all day long because I'm a big fan, and they're not paying me to say that. You can go out to your Spotify app on your phone, and I can do a search in Spotify for Superstition, and it'll pull the song right up. I press the play button, and I'm listening to the song I want to hear, and it's not stored locally on my phone. I'm not taking up any of the storage. I'm just using the cellular data or Wi-Fi bandwidth. So that's the big hitch there, is you have to have an internet signal to use a streaming service unless you download the media from the streaming service locally to the device you're using. And that's one thing that some of those services offer as an option.
Let's take Spotify and let's take Pandora. How does something like Pandora differ from Spotify?
Pandora is more of a playlist-based service where you want to listen to. So it started off where it was mapping genres of music. I'll give you a little bit of history because Pandora was one of the first players in this space, and I've got a lot of respect for where they came from. They started off as the Music Genome Project, where they were trying to create something called a music genome, where they were taking genres of music and musical artists and albums and songs and coming up with a database of relational information between those pieces of music and artists and genres of music, and finding ways that you could connect songs and musicians and albums so that search algorithms could then recommend music based on your listening patterns. So if you were listening, we'll stick with Stevie Wonder because I love Stevie Wonder. If you were listening to Stevie Wonder one day, they're collecting that information and they're saying, okay, what in our database is like this song? What genre is it from? What other artists make music like this? What songs are very similar? And can we put together a playlist of songs like this to play for this person? And then it'll create a playlist for you and just continuously play songs that are like that using these algorithms that are generated based on your listening habits and your preferences for music. So that was doing this music genome project where they were trying to map all of this music together in some sort of relational database. That then evolved into Pandora, which was you could go in and search for a song and Pandora would play you that song and then play you either other songs by that artist or other songs by similar artists, and then you had the opportunity to link that to the Apple Music, before it was Apple Music, when you were connecting via iPods more, where you could download that music to your phone or to your iPod via connection between those two services. So it was like finding the music for you and then giving you that opportunity to buy it. Then Spotify quickly was kind of the next evolution of that, which is basically you can just go in and search for any artist, album, or song that you want to hear. If you pay for that service, it will find that and you can play it right then. And then you can make your own playlist.
Yeah, there's lots that we can talk about relating to this. And we'll have you join in. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. And if you have other IT-related questions, love to hear those as well. I'm Larry Mueller. Tyler Ditter, our engineer today. Natalie Guyette, our producer, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at subscription services and music streaming and other tech advice with our guest today, Beth D'Angelo of the UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us to ideas@wpr.org. Beth, we had a caller online who wanted some further explanation on how to get and use things like Spotify. If you could just go back to the basics and talk about how to get started from the beginning as far as how to listen to music or podcasts.
Absolutely. There's multiple different ways you could go about it, depending on the type of device that you want to listen to the music on. We'll stick with Spotify just for a kind of an easy consistency here, like we do with Microsoft. So you have the ability to listen to music via Spotify, either on your mobile device. So if you have an Apple or an Android phone, that'd be, you know, either one of those types of smartphones. There is an app that you can download using either the Google Play Store or the App Store or the Android Store to download the Spotify application directly to your phone. Once you've got that app downloaded and loaded on your phone, you can open that app. There is a free version of Spotify that's available without a subscription, so you don't need to pay money for it to try it out. The free version is available to anyone. You'll set up an account so that it can keep track of the songs that you save and what you're searching and make recommendations to you. So when you launch the application, it's first going to ask you to create an account. It's not going to ask you for any money or any billing information right away. You don't have to do that unless you want to subscribe for the premium service. And there are differences in what you can do between the basic service for free and the premium service. But if you just want to get started, I would say start with the basic. Don't pay for it right away and see if you like it. If you do, then you can make a decision on which one of the services is going to work best for you and choose to pay for one of the premium services if you want more of the features. But getting started with these is really just as simple as downloading the app to your phone. Or if you don't have a smartphone and you want to use your computer to listen to music, you can actually just go to Spotify.com in a browser, and you can just from that browser application search Spotify and play music directly from there with your account. Or you can download an application for your desktop computer and load the Spotify application on your desktop, which gives you some more features than the web version does. So kind of three different ways to go about it.
Yeah, and so and that app, let's say from your computer, you can get at an app store, or where do you get that?
From the computer, go to Spotify.com.
Okay.
Yep, Spotify.com is going to give you the download for the desktop version, and it'll also give you the web version.
All right. Let's go to Bob in Franklin, Wisconsin. Bob, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, my question is very similar, but I'd like to use my TV and the speaker system to listen to music and stream movies. But I have Time Warner Cable for the TV, phone, and internet. How do I stream to the TV? Do I need to buy hardware for that?
Yeah, that's a good question. So to stream to the TV, you've got Spectrum Internet, so you're already internet connected in your home. But you need a device that's actually going to basically go between your TV and that internet connection. Now, a lot of TVs that you buy nowadays, actually, they're called smart TVs. They can connect directly to your internet connection, either over your Wi-Fi network or via an Ethernet cable. It looks kind of like a phone cable, but it's got a little bit bigger jack on either end, and that would connect directly to your Wi-Fi router or to your internet cable modem. So a lot of the newer TVs you can direct connect, but if you've got an older TV that doesn't have that type of connection like I do, you can get a device that goes in between it's called a streaming device, and there's many different brands. There's a couple of the different ones that I've used are one's called a Roku, that's R-O-K-U, Roku device. And that basically has preloaded applications on it, like Netflix and Hulu and a lot of the other streaming services. And it creates an interface, kind of like the menu that you see when you connect your DVD player or like the old VCRs up to your TV. You would get a menu to use an extra device connected to your TV. Same thing happens when you connect one of these streaming devices. So it's going to go into either an HDMI or a VGA or an auxiliary plug-in on the back of your TV. It's going to have a remote control that comes with it. You'll be able to switch to the input that you've plugged it into with the selector on your TV, and an interface will come up on your TV that you can control with the remote to select the application you want to use for streaming television. So if it's Netflix, you can choose the Netflix app and then sign into the Netflix service or sign up for a new account right through your TV.
Yeah, I have a Roku. It's worked pretty well, but lately the volume control's not working on it, so I don't know what's going
on. Might be time for a new one. Another one that I've used is also called a Kindle Fire Stick. Those are pretty simple to use if you're familiar with the Android operating system. Like if you have an Android phone or a Kindle or an Android tablet, then the Fire interface is really similar. So it might be something that's, translates really well for consistency. There's also Apple TV. So if you have like an iPhone and you're used to what that interface looks like, Apple TV might be the streaming device that you want to choose. But there are dozens of different streaming devices to choose from out there.
Bob, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. I hope that helped. Did it help you out? I think we may have lost Bob. Alan in River Falls, we'll go to you. Hi, Alan.
I say about 10 years ago, or maybe even 15 now, I started copying CDs onto my computer and loading music onto iTunes. And that would allow me to play that music regardless of whether I had an internet connection or not. But then Apple introduced this thing called Match, and supposedly it provided a higher quality version of the same song, the same artist, etc., but you were getting it through the internet instead of what was stored on your hard drive. And now the most recent iteration of this with Apple Music, as I understand it, means you're getting all your music not from your hard drive, but rather from the internet. And my problem with that is that I put a lot of work into loading that. If I want to go to a place up in an internet connection, I don't have my stuff. Is that right?
Beth, did you get all
that? I did, yeah. I think I heard enough to answer. So the Match service, generally what that does is it allows you to – basically what it's doing is it's telling Apple Music that you already own a copy of this music. Therefore, you are entitled to own it as it exists in the cloud. So they may have higher quality versions of the songs that you already own a copy of on their catalog. So usually when you take a CD and convert it to like an MP3 file to save on your hard drive, there's a lot of loss that you get in the sound quality of the music as it exists on your hard drive. What they're doing is they're giving you that higher quality file that's streaming to your device rather than you listening to the downloaded version that's already saved on your device. But when you're offline and trying to listen to that music, it's not going to reach out to the online catalog for it. It's still going to play from your locally stored collection of music. So it's not actually removing that collection. It's just augmenting it with higher quality from their catalog, looking at your catalog and knowing that you already own the rights to it.
Alan, does that help?
Yes, it does. So it sounds like I haven't lost anything really All I've lost is the ability to get higher quality.
When you're not online, you can't get those high-quality streaming songs. You can just get the lower quality that you may have stored on your hard drive.
Yeah,
right.
There we go.
Thank you.
Yeah,
you're
thanks, Alan. You know, Donica from Mondovi emailed to share the perspective from an independent artist. They said it's wonderful these services make our music available to the world, but the musicians get approximately 1/100th of a cent for each stream.
Yeah, I'd say that the equitable sharing of profits is probably not first in the mind of the folks who are building these services. And while it does create a platform for independent artists who may not have the ability to get their work out to the masses, otherwise, it certainly isn't creating an equitable way to compensate those independent artists. So, you know, I'd say that the business model has a ways to go to catch up in order to incentivize people still creating content for them to stream.
Yeah, absolutely. Gianni in Marquette County, let's go to you now. Thanks for calling.
Yes, I am a bit old school, and I have a satellite with one of the name brand providers, satellite dish, but it's getting very expensive. So I'd like to go with an indoor or possibly an outdoor television antenna. But we're 60 miles north of Madison, and 60 miles from Appleton, and farther from Green Bay, 70 miles south of Wausau. So how can I get these signals on a regular antenna that I could hook up either outside or perhaps even much easier to put it inside the house? Is there an antenna that you would recommend to pull in signals without having to put up a tower and a traditional television antenna?
Sure.
Yeah. So I'd say maybe 4 or 5 years ago, the analog TV signals, over-the-air TV signals that we were used to receiving just with the standard, like rabbit ears, as we used to call them, TV antennas, were discontinued. And everything was basically shifted over to digital TV signals, which require a different type of antenna. But also those digital signals, you'll get many more of them. They travel much longer distances, and the antennas that they have are a lot more sensitive now. So what you can purchase, instead of having to continue with the satellite TV, if you still want to get a whole bunch of channels, you can purchase a digital TV antenna, which will pick up a whole bunch of channels, kind of regardless of where you are, probably more channels than you'd ever want, because half of them might not even be, in your native language. There are tons of different types of digital TV antennas out there on the market, anything from like a $20 indoor antenna up to like, $150 or $200, kind of heavy duty one for getting signals from longer distances with less interference. If you want clearer picture, if there's certain specific channels you're trying to get in, there are also amplified indoor antennas that you can buy. There are tons of them out on Amazon. As far as like best that are out there right now, I've got a couple right now. I haven't paid more than like $30 for one. I don't have any cable TV. I actually don't watch a whole lot of TV, but when I do want to catch a local channel, I've just purchased kind of the cheapy ones that you get from Best Buy or a couple off of Amazon. I think Amazon has a couple of them out there for like $25. I would search there. I would start with something on the less expensive side and see if that picks up the signals you're looking for. If you're not getting what you're looking for out of that, then you may want to upgrade to something in the mid to higher end range, especially if you're further out from any of the major market television stations. But at 60 miles out from a major market, you should be able to catch many, many channels coming out of Madison, Milwaukee, Green Bay, even Chicago, potentially even Canada. I pick up stuff from up in Canada sometimes on my cheap one. So lots of options out there.
Oh, Gianni, there you go. I hope that helps. Thank you so much for calling. Bill in Waterford will go to you next. Hi, Bill.
Okay, thanks for taking my call. I guess I'm really old. Anyways, can I still do this? Can I download music from the internet? I'll certainly pay for the music, you know, from Johnny Cash or Elvis, whatever. So from the internet to my computer, and then from the computer to a CD. And we call them music CDs at one time. And then I can just go to my CD in my house or my car and then play the music I want to hear. Period. You know, not having, well, okay, Spotify or whatever, play other tunes for me. I'm not interested in that.
Yeah, that's the way we used to do it. Back when I started, you know, getting music off the internet, it was downloading a song, storing it on your hard drive, and then making a CD in a CD creator and burning it to a disc and then putting that disc in my CD player in my car. So, you know, things have gotten a lot fancier now, but you still can do it that way. iTunes is one of the main ways that folks still download songs, you know, a song at a time. You can purchase them. Usually it's 99 cents per song or $9.99 or $10.99 for a whole album, similar to when you'd go to a record store and buy a CD or a record back in the day. What's nice now is that you can just purchase one song at a time. If you don't like the whole album, you can just buy one of the songs. There's also Amazon Music, which you can download songs directly to your hard drive and have a store of music that you can access that locally on your computer that you can listen to those same songs whenever you want to and not have to pay over and over again for a subscription service to do that. If you wanted to burn something off of your computer onto a CD, there's a really nice program that I've been using for about 20 years. They just keep making new versions of it called Roxio Easy CD. That's R-O-X-I-O Easy CD. It's a paid software program. It does cost about $30, but you only have to buy it once. And like I said, I've been using it for about 20 years and it's always worked very well. It's very easy to use, allows you to burn CDs and DVDs and convert media from one type to another if you need to. There's also all kinds of like video editing and other stuff built into it if you want to start getting into that stuff. So I'd say for the money, it's probably the best one out there.
All right. There you go. Bill, did you get that?
Well, what was it? Roxio, R-O-X-I-O, and then what?
Easy, E-A-S-Y, C-D.
Okay, so I can purchase that, pay for it, and then it's sitting there, and then I can use it when I want to.
Correct.
Yep.
Okay, RoxioEasyCD.com. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right, thanks, Bill. Appreciate the call. Steve in Sturgeon Bay, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Steve.
Hi, thank you. I love your show. I've just moved back to Wisconsin recently from California. You've got a great show, great station. Anyway, I wanted to comment on the streaming, and I'm a big fan of YouTube. And a lot of people don't know that you can get a paid YouTube account, and it'll allow you to stream music just like Spotify, which I've also had. And the benefit, I think, many times, you get to see the artists on video where, you know, if I sent the video link to, let's say, someone who wasn't a subscriber, they're going to get all kinds of commercial pop-ups. So this eliminates that when you have the paid version. And it seems like it gives you just as much musical options as any other service, as far as I know.
What do you pay for that, Steve?
Yeah, it's about $10 or $11 a month.
Okay.
The cool thing about the YouTube service is that you're getting video and audio. So, like you said, Steve, if you like to watch the videos of the artists that you're listening to, you can watch those videos while you listen to the music. But then you also have all of the other content available to you within YouTube as well as part of that service fee that you're paying ad free. That's a really big bonus if you like watching YouTube videos. I know my kids watch YouTube all the time and would love to have that without the ads. Of course, I'm not going to pay for another streaming service, so they're not getting that. But really, you get that bonus of the video side of YouTube, plus that you can use it as a streaming music service as well. You can make music playlists on it. There are tons of playlists out there. You can stream stuff ad-free if you pay for the YouTube Premium. There's also like premium content that's out there on YouTube that you can't see otherwise. So certain TV shows stream only on YouTube that if you don't pay for the premium service, you can't get access to. So if you're looking for specific content, YouTube is a good option.
Yeah. Steve, thanks. Appreciate it. Karen in, let's see, Cleghorn, Wisconsin. Hi, Karen.
Hi. Good morning. I am looking for internet. I had Viasat internet and satellite, so it was problem like when the weather changed, you know, my satellite was always going out. And then I got another satellite that is from the cell towers, but the service provider is having a real problem. They go through AT&T, and AT&T, I guess, is shutting down accounts, and I don't know. So I live in central Wisconsin, and I'm near west central Wisconsin, and I'm just wondering about what is a good provider for internet. And yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I'm in a very hilly area.
Yeah, I would say sometimes, especially in rural areas, when you're not near like a major market or a larger city or town, getting reliable quality broadband internet service is really a struggle for folks because a lot of the broadband providers aren't building the infrastructure. It's not cost effective for them. They can't subscribe enough users to make it cost effective for them to put the fiber optic lines in necessary to carry those, you know, high speed internet signals out to those rural communities. So folks in those areas are really missing out on the ability to access, you know, streaming content or all of the things that you can access when you have that broadband internet without paying a real high fee for something like satellite internet, which often is really unreliable as well. There is something that is coming, and I've talked about this on a few other shows with Larry. It is called Starlink, and it's being launched by a company called SpaceX. It is not live yet, but it is currently in what we call beta testing, which means a bunch of people sign up to be guinea pigs and figure out whether it works well or not and give feedback to the company. What they are doing is putting this huge network of satellites out in space to basically cover the globe with a consistent broadband internet signal that's supposed to really rival the speeds that we get on like fiber optic broadband at home in major cities. So we're looking at estimated speeds of 50 to 150 megabits per second, which is real good internet speed. If you don't speak that language, that means you can stream everything you want. You're not going to run out of bandwidth. They're looking at cost of about $100 a month, though, and I know you're looking for something more cost effective. I'd say for what they're promising, that's a reasonable price. If they can deliver on it, $100 a month is going to be worth it because when you're able to do that, then you can eliminate a lot of other costs that you might need to pay for, like some of the equipment to get a better signal or things like that.
Okay, Karen, does that help?
We're really putting a lot of eggs in that Starlink basket because that's really supposed to be what helps folks in rural communities get that access. So.
Is there a way for me to sign up to someone who does some testing?
Yeah, actually, I signed up as a beta tester. I haven't gotten my invitation to join yet, but if you head out to, let me get the website for you real quick. I think it's just starlink.com, S-T-A-R-L-I-N-K. If you go to that page, it'll ask for your service address. Put your address in there. And it'll put order now, and it'll take you through the steps to put your information in to find out if you're eligible to be a tester based on the area that you're in. And then they will process that basically on a first-come, first-serve, so based on who signs up.
All right. Karen, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Beth D'Angelo, our guest today. She's worked in IT for nearly 20 years, a senior IT specialist at UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking today with Beth D'Angelo about streaming services. We've talked about music services and, of course, taking your IT questions as well at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call or email us to ideas@wpr.org. Karen in Madison has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Karen.
Hello, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. Love your show. I apologize if you've addressed this already. I don't think so, but I heard something like it. We had a power outage earlier, and we just got our power back on. I was calling about, I have an older iMac, and we were able to, you know, burn CDs to that. And then when I got a newer iPhone, it wouldn't recognize my phone in iTunes. So we are planning on getting a newer desktop. However, in the meantime, I can't, how do I get my music file onto a newer phone, or do I have to wait until I get a newer desktop, or do they even have iTunes anymore?
Yeah, that is a good question, Karen. So iTunes has been around for like 20 years, and Apple is finally retiring it. They're killing it off slowly. It is no longer available on the new iPhones. It's now called just the Music app. So if you go into the Music app on your new iPhone, that's really what iTunes used to be. Now you're saying when you plug your new iPhone into your old computer, that iTunes on your old computer won't see your new iPhone to be able to put music onto it?
Exactly. It doesn't even recognize it, which is unfortunate because our old, you know, I used to be able to back up my phone to the computer then too, and I can't even do that.
Yeah, they're actually, so what's happening is right now you probably have an incompatibility because the newer Macintosh operating system uses something different to recognize and control an iPhone than the old ones did. So you've got the new iPhone with the old iMac, and the two aren't talking to each other because they use different services now to communicate with each other. So if you were to have, if you had a new computer, it has something within the Find Mac, I believe, the Find Mac portion of the operating system on the iMac to be able to connect to your new iPhone. It doesn't use iTunes anymore. So, which is smart. iTunes never should have been the way that you connect a device to another device. It's just how they started with things, but they're going away from that now. So in order to get the music that's on your iMac onto that iPhone, probably you're going to have to sign into your Apple account on your Music app on your iPhone and download it to your iPhone from your iCloud where your music is stored.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does.
You won't be able to do it computer to phone. You'll be able to do it cloud to phone.
Okay. Okay. And then in the future, if I still want to burn, you know, because I'd have to get a separate CD burner now because they aren't built into the computers anymore. If I want to burn, will I be able to add to that Apple Music file on the new computer if I get a new computer? And do they still allow you to add, you know, have your own music in there?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you have say all that music that is sitting right now in your current iTunes on your old iMac. So, and we talked about this a little bit earlier. There's a service called iTunes Match. If you sign up for iTunes Match, it will synchronize the music that is sitting on your hard drive on your old iMac with your Apple Music account. So Apple Music will know you have rights to that music. And then on your new machine, you'll be able to download that music to the Music app on the new one.
Good plan. I'm like, I thought that should work. Can I ask you one more question, which I didn't actually ask the call screener? We also have supposedly we have a Sony smart TV, and we're supposedly getting HBO Max, but it's not recognized. We can't get it. The app is not on our TV. So do we need like a Roku or a Chromecast or something like that to be able to get that HBO Max?
Are you able to add apps to your smart TV? Do they have like an app store or an app?
I've never tried that.
Yeah, I'm trying to install that app. If it's, I would go into the settings. Usually, I'm not sure what kind of smart TV it is, but usually in the settings, there's an application. Yeah, almost all of them have a similar menu layout. So if you go into the settings of the smart TV, there's generally a menu for applications. And within the applications settings, there'll be an option to add applications, and it'll let you search for what you want to add to it, just like a streaming device would, just like a Roku. Same thing. Okay. You can add applications that aren't pre-installed on there.
Okay, because there used to be an HBO Now on there, but that's gone. So I tried looking it up, and they said something about having a problem with Android.
It used to be HBO Go, and then it was HBO Now, and now it's HBO Max, and they keep changing it. So I imagine it'll be something different next week.
There you go. Thanks, Karen. Good luck. Appreciate the call. Tom in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Tom.
Hi. There was a technology that was still talked about perhaps 10 years ago or more concerning internet access in cosmopolitan areas. It was called WiMAX, and I wondered what had happened to the technology.
Sorry, I was on mute. WiMAX, that's one I haven't heard for a long time. I think I'm going to assume you're talking about the effort to try to create like larger scale computing networks in like cities. Like I think in Madison they had Mad City Broadband for a while, which was like a subscription broadband service that like covered a large area of the city. Otherwise, I'm not sure what else you'd be referring to in WiMAX.
Yeah, I don't, it's not one that I can bring up out of my brain either.
Yeah, not something I'm really familiar with.
Sorry, Tom, maybe somebody else has some information on it. They could call in and let us know. Thanks for calling. Dave in Broadhead, your turn. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for your show. Hey, I have a question. My internet went down a week or so ago, and we got it back up, but then we couldn't connect any of our devices through the Wi-Fi. It kept saying it wasn't recognizing the internet. And I'm just wondering, is that a problem with something with our internet provider, or would that be a problem with the actual Wi-Fi unit that I'd need to probably either replace it or do something with it?
Yeah, it could be either. I would start with your internet provider. That's usually the best starting point, and have them troubleshoot your actual internet connection to make sure that you're getting a live connection coming into that router. And if they see that your connection is live all the way up to the router, but then beyond that, they don't have control beyond that. As long as that connection is getting to your router, then we can kind of eliminate the actual internet provider as being the problem. And likely there's either a setting problem or configuration problem with the router, or it may not be functioning properly at all.
The internet, I could go to my desktop computer and I could get on the internet from my desktop computer.
So that's directly connected to your internet?
What's that?
I'm sorry. Your desktop is directly connected to the incoming internet. Is it? Do you have cable internet or do you have?
No, it's broadband, but it's connected to the router, and then from the router to the desktop.
Okay, but a hardwired connection to your desktop.
Yeah. No, it is. Well, yeah, it's a hardwired one because it goes from the router to the. Router to the computer.
Yeah. Right. So you've got a wired connection from the router to the computer, that, and the internet is working on that, and then all of the devices are not connecting via Wi-Fi to the router.
Right. That's correct.
Gotcha. Okay. So that tells me that, all right, so your internet is working, so you can eliminate the provider. You don't need to talk to them. Likely, there are some settings within the Wi-Fi router that are not configured properly for you to be able to connect to it. So generally, there is an administration address that you can go to on that router to look at those settings in your, if you launch a browser on your desktop computer. This is a little bit technical, but if you're willing to try it, if you launch a browser window, like, you know, whatever browser you use, and in the address bar, type in 128.0.0.1. That's usually the admin address for your router. You can log into it and take a look at those settings.
There you go. Thank you so much for that call. Appreciate it, Dave. Beth D'Angelo, our guest today. She is the senior IT specialist at UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology, and she will be with us right up till 12:30 today. We will take a look at the news and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with Beth. I'm Larry Mueller. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Beth D'Angelo back with us today, senior IT specialist of UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. 20 years of tech experience, so it's great to have her with us, and thank you for joining in. Problems with your computer, your phone, or other technology, maybe your streaming service, give us a call at 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. And Christy in Chippewa Falls is up next with a question. Hi, Christy.
Hi, thank you. This is a very helpful episode today. Question, when I open my phone or my Gmail account, I just get all these ads. Many I don't recognize, nor have I asked for them. And I've used both my phone and my laptop to block the sender, but I'm still getting many each time I open things up. What do I do?
Yes, spam, the bane of my existence. I've got a couple of ways that I fight spam personally. One of them is a little bit more of a strategy for not getting the spam in the first place. And it's anytime I sign up for something that requires an email address, I have a secondary email address that's not the one that I give out to people who I'm actually asking for email from. So I use the secondary email address as the verification address for signing up for anything on the internet. So if it's any kind of account that I'm trying to log into, or basically anything that's not me saying, hey, you send me an email, I'm giving them this separate account to use that I don't really look at unless I'm looking for something specific. It's just a different email address that all my spam goes to, so that I don't get all of that coming into my primary email address that I actually use to communicate with people. So that's a little bit of a strategic way to avoid some of the spam in the future. But to avoid some of the stuff you're currently getting, there's a service that I've used called Unsubscribe Me. You can go out to I think it's unsubscribeme.com. You put your email address in, and it will search from its database of thousands and thousands and thousands of these spammers and find any of the lists that you're subscribed on and automatically do go through the unsubscribe process for you. So you won't have to click on those unsubscribe links on the bottom of every spam message you get to get taken off of those lists. So Unsubscribe Me is a really helpful way to do that in you know, one large batch of stuff that you don't want coming into you.
Ah, Christy, does that help?
What about on my phone where I'm getting messages off my digits of my phone number?
Oh, you're talking about spam SMS messages, like text messages coming into you?
Exactly.
Yeah, other than blocking those numbers, there's not a lot you can do.
So when it comes up from a phone number, you can go, if you say like you've got an iPhone, somebody sends you a text message. If you go to the information on the number that texted you, there's an option at the bottom that says block this caller. If you block that number, they'll no longer be able to text you.
It's the hard way to do it. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
I see five digits, but I don't see the Michael's phone number, and I've done unsubscribe from their company website.
Yeah, I would try blocking it anyway, even with the five digit.
Okay, I'll work on that. Thanks for your help today. Very, very helpful.
You are welcome.
All right. Annie in La Crosse, we'll go to you now. Hi, Annie.
Hi. Say, I don't know if you all know out there, but if you are a senior, you can get Amazon Prime for half price.
Well, that's cool. So I did not know that.
I didn't know that either. You're over 65, in other words, Annie?
Right, right. And also, so you just have to go in there and look for it and then prove it. And I can't remember exactly how it was, but yeah. Also, there are services from your library called Hoopla and Libby, and they have music and books on CD and all that stuff, and you can actually download them onto your device so that you don't have to have internet to listen to it, and then it disappears after a certain amount of time, so it's not saved on your phone forever.
Yeah, that's one thing that's nice about those services. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of like a sharing service rather than a download forever, and then you have to go in and clean it up.
Yeah, that's nice. Annie, thank you. Appreciate it. Well, let's go to Steve in Duluth, Minnesota then. Hi, Steve. Steve, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, what can we do for you?
I'm having trouble getting internet routed in a home from the router to a second room, but it's kind of a convoluted process. We have phone and VoIP over VoIP. It's fiber optic on the road. It comes twisted pair to the home. The twisted pair is connected to a router in our main living area. And then I have a line from that modem going down to a distribution box where I've got phone connections as well as the RJ45 Cat5 cable connections that feed the rooms in the house. So I have an unmanaged switch in that distribution center which gets its feed from the IP provider's modem, and I put together and I wired the house when we were building it, so I've got the Cat5 cables in each room, and I've connected the RJ45 cables, and I used a Greenlee tone tester, a 200B tone probe, which is used for both phone and for internet connections. And I just get static when I test that RJ45 line that comes from the distribution box to the room where I want to have my desktop computer hardwired to the router.
Yeah, so you're getting you're not getting a signal through all the way to the jack.
I use it. My son's a programmer, so he recommended the unmanaged switch because we have a TiVo box in our main living area, right next to where the router is.
Yeah.
And we have a second room where we put a mini TiVo in, and the unmanaged switch successfully gets the TiVo signal down to the rec room, basically. So that works fine. And
the other run to that other jack isn't providing a signal.
Right. And this unmanaged switch, it's a small one. It just has five ports. So my son advised me to put the RJ45 cable from the router into port number one, and then put the other distributed lines into the connectors 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah, that's correct. That's the way it would be wired. So what I'm concerned about is the length of the cable runs. So when you talk about Cat 5 and twisted pair cable, you end up with something called attenuation on the line, which is signal loss. Okay. And with that type of copper cable, you've got a total run length of about 300 feet if there's nothing in between.
Okay,
but once you start adding a switch in between, you significantly increase the amount of attenuation on that line, and you're going to end up with some of your ports not getting a signal. It's all of the lines. So from the termination point at the end of the fiber optics all the way to that jack, you've got a total of 300 feet if there's nothing in between it. So
okay.
You're probably running into a signal loss issue with too long of a run to do with an unmanaged switch. You may want to look at replacing that unmanaged switch with a repeater or a managed bridge that will give you a signal boost so that you can get all the way to that jack.
The unmanaged switch does have, it does have power, and I've got power to that distribution box.
It's a powered switch, but it's it doesn't repeat any signal.
I see.
So you're still going to get all that signal loss. If you put it in a bridge, you're not going to get the signal loss. Or if you put in a repeater, you'll get a signal boost.
What did you call that bridge again?
It'd be either a bridge or a repeater.
A repeater, okay. Yeah, the total line, total distance from the home to the...
Yep. We may have lost Steve there.
We
lost him.
Oh, he's coming in and out.
Steve.
The distance from the fiber optic to the home is probably 125 feet, and then there's probably 40 feet of line length to where the router is.
Mm-hmm.
And then
from the router to the other room.
And then so goes another 40 feet back to the other room, and then 30 feet back to the room I'm trying to connect. So I'm getting up near that.
And that 300 feet is best case scenario. So that's with no other signal loss happening. So if you didn't have any other electrical interference happening in the structure, so that's really optimal conditions. You get 300 feet, so you can't really do long cable runs with Cat 5 or Cat 6.
Yep. There you go, Steve. Thank you for calling. Let's go to Kurt in Rochester, Minnesota. Hi, Kurt.
Hi. How you doing?
Good. Good. Appreciate the call.
I have about 1,000 albums. I'm obviously not going to record all of them, but I'm trying to sell them, actually. But what's the best way to transfer them into something other than the LPs?
Yeah, there actually are devices out there that you can use that will allow you to do this. A friend of mine had one many years ago, and actually it was cool. It looked like a little... old time record player. So they're actually cute, not bad looking. You can put CDs directly into them, put a record on top, and copy the record directly to a CD if you want to. They range in price from $150 to $350. If you don't want to have to deal with doing this through a computer and using software and going through the real extensive process of ripping all of that music, you can use those conversion devices really simply to convert your music onto CD if you wanted to get rid of those records.
Huh?
Although I'll
there
take
you
the
go.
Records if you got any good stuff.
There you go, Kurt. Thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. Yeah, people are kind of liking vinyl again.
I never stopped liking vinyl, but, some people are coming back to it, that's for sure. There are some of us who never gave it up, but.
Oh, man. Christina in Glenwood City, your turn. Hi, Christina.
Hi there. Thank you. I live in the country. I have no internet. Currently have dish satellite for television. Expensive, not happy. I am still using the old big tube TVs. It works great. But I'm thinking about upgrading. I don't want to have to do this again. So I'm wondering if you could advise a newbie about which direction to go so that I don't have to do this again. Should I dive right in, get a smart TV, and then what comes along with it?
That is a good question. So the first thing I would do is to check to see what kind of internet service you have available to you in your area. There are a bunch of different internet service providers that service Wisconsin, but it's really a matter of which one in your particular locality services your address. So I would do a search. I mean, if you do Google search for your city name or your county name and internet service providers, it'll likely give you a list of all of the different broadband or high-speed internet providers in your area. You'll need to reach out to those companies individually to find out if your address is officially covered by them and what level of service you can expect to get from them. If you would like to be able to stream video, meaning you want to start watching TV over the internet instead of your old dish satellite, you want to get rid of the dish satellite and switch over to streaming internet TV, you're going to need at least six megabits per second to be able to get a good stream without the picture stopping and buffering and waiting and then picking back up again. So if you want to continuously stream, 6 megabits, the minimum that you need. I would look to probably from a service provider anywhere in the like 20 to 40 megabit range to get reliably good high speed internet access that you're going to be able to stream whatever you want without worrying about it. So I would connect with those internet service providers, find out what they can provide you with. If you can get, that 6 is that bare minimum, but like 12 to 15 is probably what you want.
That's better.
Not have it be uncomfortable. Yeah, it's better. So check with them. Once you find out what kind of internet you can get, if you would like to get a new TV to work with that, a smart TV is really a great direction to go. Then you don't need a device in between the TV and the internet service to give you access to the streaming TV services. You can do it right through the TV. There are any number of manufacturers now putting out really fantastic smart TVs. I've got a Sony and a Samsung right now, both of which are fantastic. No problems with those. Any of the major TV manufacturers are now pretty much making exclusively smart TVs. I don't know that you can buy a TV that isn't internet capable anymore.
I've got a Sony. It's been great. So there you go. Thank you so much for that question, Chris. Let's go to Joanne in Neshkoro next. Hi, Joanne.
Hi. This might be kind of a stupid question. I'm kind of a Luddite here. I do have good internet service, and on CBS and in some of the other stations, it'll say this show is going to be on at this time or stream anytime. Now, if I can't watch that show at that particular time, how can I stream it?
Yeah, so this is the new way of watching TV. Instead of watching it when they play it live, over the air, you can watch it whenever it's convenient for you, because they're keeping a catalog basically up on their servers in this cloud that we keep talking about. They have a catalog of all of those titles available to you through their app. So CBS is going to have a streaming service app, and that is usually available on a smartphone or on a computer or through a streaming device that you would connect to your TV and then connect to your internet connection, just like you would connect like a DVD player or your cable provider. If you had cable TV, usually they have a box that plugs into your TV to give you that cable signal. Well, same thing with these streaming services. You need a little translation device if you don't have a smart TV that will take that internet signal and give you an application, then like the CBS app that you can open up, log into, and watch whatever television program they have available to you in their catalog. So it takes a device to do that with. So either a smart TV or something between your internet and smart TV, which would be a streaming device. We've talked about the Roku or the Amazon, the Kindle Fire Stick, or the Apple TV. Those are three different options for those. Or you can watch on an internet-capable device like a smart TV, or on your iPhone or Android phone with
the CBS streaming app that you would download from the App Store.
All right, Joanne, does that help?
An old TV, so, I mean, it's a 10-year-old TV. So I pay public TV $60 a year so that I can watch any of those shows on public, you know, but it's not going to work with CBS and those shows. So I don't have any app or anything like that.
One of those little streaming devices, they're like $25 or $30. If you want to be able to do this, you can purchase one of those streaming devices, and they will connect to an older TV. I actually have an older TV with a Roku on it, and works just fine. Purchase one of those devices, and it'll have all the apps loaded on it for you.
Yeah, so you won't have to worry about it. And it's a one-time fee.
Yep, one-time fee. You don't have to have a subscription. It just uses your existing internet connection.
There you go. Joanne, good luck. Appreciate your call. A caller just looked into the half price on Amazon Prime, you know, for retired folks, and found that it's only half price for seniors if you are also on Medicaid or have an EBT card. I'm not sure what EBT, what that is, but she just wanted to let us know that there are some qualifications. You just don't automatically get it if you are at that senior status level. Oh, it's food assistance. Tyler's letting me know that EBT card is a food assistance card.
Gotcha. So there's some qualifications that you have to meet in order to get that half price, huh?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And that makes some sense. Well, here in our last minute, is there anything, I'm trying to think of what we might not have covered. Any final last words for our listeners here today, Beth?
Just be careful what you sign up for. A lot of things have like a free week, but they ask for a credit card. And then after that free week, they start charging you. Make sure you set a reminder for yourself to cancel that subscription. If you had to put in any payment information and you were only looking for the free service, it's only going to be for a certain amount of time, and then they're going to automatically charge you for it. So make sure you unsubscribe to that service if you don't want to start paying for it after that free time is up.
Beth, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much for taking time to be with us today, and we will look forward to your next visit. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks, Larry. Have a great day.
You as well. Beth DeAngelo worked in IT for 20 years. She's a senior IT specialist at UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. And she'll be back in a couple of months, and we'll do this all over again with her. Coming up tomorrow on the show, Daniel Golden from Boswell Books joins us to share his picks for summer reading. And then at 11:45, we learn about a part of the UW system called the Odyssey Program, breaking the cycle of generational poverty through access to education. In the meantime, I hope you stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.